Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey, Sound Opinions listeners. If you support us on Patreon, you get to listen to our podcast ad-free on Patreon.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we'll be talking with the Israeli musician Tamar Afek. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, some buried treasures.
Buried treasures. Greg, regular listeners of the show know that every 6-8 weeks or something like that, we like to dig deep and share with our listeners music that is flying below the mainstream radar that they may not have heard of, we think deserves a wider audience. It's always a fun time, and I am going to lead us off with this week's picks. It's actually my first choice is by a guy who is an old friend of ours from the indie rock days, from your former stomping grounds of upstate New York. I am talking about Pat Thomas. He has reactivated his band Mushroom. Let me tell you about Pat Thomas. I first met him when he traveled down in the van from Rochester with his as the drummer in his band Absolute Grey. I think we were two of the biggest Paisley Underground fans on the East Coast, and he was even a bigger fan. I mean, he got way into the Dream Syndicate. We're both writing for fanzines, right? Pat has never stopped that love of music that an 18, 19-year-old kid has. He started a record company, Heyday Records. He traveled to England, tracking down original members of the incredible String Band and Pentangle and Fairport Convention, Shirley Collins, putting out long-out-of-print releases. He's a darn good writer and musical historian. He did a biography of Jerry Rubin. He did a fantastic collection of snarly, sarcastic interviews with Lou Reed. My Week Beats Your Year, some of the best Lou Reed. And he's never stopped drumming. I will say, and this is the highest compliment I can pay any drummer, he really has a style like Yaki Lipizzit, the great drummer from Cannes. And Mushroom, it's right there in the name, is inspired by that krautrock movement of the early 70s. Improvisational. It's gotten raves in the underground press for being great trippy rock, and it's gotten high praise in Downbeat for being serious jazz. In August 2019, Pat and the current version of Mushroom recorded a new album called Songs of Descent live in San Francisco's Makeout Room, and I'm going to play a track from it. It's just fantastic. If you love this krautrock, space rock, trippy jazz rock, two men say they're Jesus, one of them must be wrong, by Mushroom. The illustrious Mr. Pat Thomas. I'm somewhat ashamed, Greg, we've never had him on the show because he's done so much great stuff. We should just do a Pat Thomas show. That's his band Mushroom. That track evolves and expands and blows your mind. There are many pieces. Do listen to all of it.
No, it's wonderful. I mean, obviously the title, you go, this can't be bad. This is going to be
this is going to be at least interesting, right?
It's got
to be good.
But the whole idea of noise being sort of a narcotic, sort of, you don't get deafened by the noise, you sort of bliss out to it. And big part of that is that hypnotic drum groove that starts up about a couple minutes into the song and just never quits. So I do love that. I'm going to go something a little bit more melodic for my first choice. UVTV, a band out of Gainesville, Florida, not exactly a hotbed of this style of music, but this band started there and has since moved to New York for their third album, which is the one I want to highlight today. Their first two albums were very catchy DIY indie pop rock. Mm. Very the reference points, you know. Pop punk, garage, a lot of UK 80s influence. You know, House of Love, a lot of primitives. I'm hearing a lot of those kind of reference points. To my mind, they're not reinventing anything, but they are writing really good melodic pop songs. This third album is self-produced. I love Rose Vestola, the lead vocalist. She's got that sort of deadpan vocal style that perfectly complements this music. And then the guitarist, Ian Bernisette, I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly, Ian. He's a whiz, man. This album incorporates different tones and textures on the guitar, but it's all focused on the song and the melody. Here's a track called Back to Nowhere from UVTV on Sound Opinions. UVTV with Back to Nowhere. The name of the record is Always Something on Sound Opinions.
You perked up my ears with that. First time I played it to sample what you were going on about, I had one word. Effervescent.
Yeah.
You know, in a very positive way. I mean, it is impossible to listen to that and not smile and not want to hit repeat as soon as it's over.
Yeah, it's a catchy little tune, isn't it?
It's a great tune. I also love a little bit of sour mixed in with my sweet. UVTV was all sweet, right? Shower Curtain, the next band I'm going to highlight, You Make Me Feel is the song, is a fantastic example of that lulling, evocative, poppy, seductive sound, and suddenly the noise comes in. I just love it. I had never heard of this project before. It is led by a woman, Victoria Winter, who is a Brazilian-American. She's based in New York now, is making quite a name for herself on that New York underground scene, had two previous EPs. Her third is coming out shortly, and apparently she has upped the noise. So more sour, still pretty sweet. This one, I guess, was recorded in her native Brazil. And I was wondering, you know, I don't read up. I mean, I let the music suck me in first, and then I look for the story of these artists, and I was like, there's something different here. There's something exotic, right? Oh, wow. Okay, there is just a hint of those native Brazilian jungles going on here, and the rhythms, of course, the complicated South American rhythm. I don't know. I'm eager to hear what you think, Mr. Cott. You Make Me Feel by Shower Curtain.
I don't wanna keep fighting. I've been trying to keep you near. I've been trying to have no fears. Have no fears. Have no fears.
shower curtain, you make me feel, our producer Andrew Gill is noting, you know, in the great non-name band name, like dry cleaning.
How drab can we make our curtain. Band name title?
Have we really reached the end of all possible monikers for band names?
Yeah, you know, it's quite possible. We're running out of things. It's household objects now, you know, the most overlooked household
well,
object.
You know, I go back.
A band name.
It's not all that new. I go back to Wire, who told me that in 76 they wanted the dullest name they could possibly find, one that had no connotations whatsoever until they put them on there. So as far as I'm concerned, Victoria now owns Shower Curtain.
Well, she does indeed. I'm never going to look at a shower curtain the same way ever again, thanks to this song. I like the noisy burst in there, the sing-songy thing. I'm going, okay, this could be painful, you know, my entire song.
Yeah,
this
but she
stuff.
Faked you out, didn't she?
She did.
When that guitar comes in.
She did. She did indeed. I want to. The next track I want to play is from a hip-hop artist named Ka, who has been part of the New York City underground scene for since the early 90s, right? Mm. Incredible string of longevity and quality music in there. A Brooklyn-based rapper, former member of the group Natural Elements. They were, again, underground before underground was a thing in hip-hop, really, especially in New York because, you know, everything was mainstream New York. It was just huge back then. He has persisted for a long time making music. Meanwhile, he is a Brooklyn-based fire department captain.
Really?
A gentleman in his late 40s now, still making really strong hip-hop records, essentially as a hobby, a part-time kind of thing.
Well, you know, the fire department works like 3 or 4 days straight, and then they have a week off. So
you can get back to putting down fires.
Yeah.
I have many, many friends who are firefighters in Chicago, so I totally understand what that lifestyle lends itself to. You have entire days where you're not doing things, and then you work in the middle of it.
Yeah.
This guy has seen a few things. He lives in that Brownsville neighborhood in Brooklyn, which is, I believe, for a number of years, had the highest murder rate of any precinct in the in New York City.
Yeah.
It's a rough neighborhood. He's been there, you know, basically all his life. So he's got some hard tales to tell about living there, working there, what it means to be an African-American in an urban environment in our country. And it's not, you know, like it's not like he's browbeating you. He's a very quiet rapper, but he's one of those guys when he talks, that voice has such gravitas to it that you almost want to lean in, like, what's going on here? Great storyteller. There's a spiritual element to the music. He's mixing in the grit of the streets that he's writing about and rapping about, but at the same time, there's a sort of a spirituality. And it's hard for me to, it's not like it's, you know, all churchy and religious, but there is an element there that there's more to life than just sort of getting by every day. So the name of this song, PWH, that I'm going to play, it's a reference to the line, "To get everything we needed, we was praying, wishing, and hoping." Mm. That's the reality of the existence that he knows.
Yeah.
It's from his latest album, A Martyr's Reward, from Ka on Sound Opinions.
Never hung our head defeated, to get everything we needed, we was praying, wishing, and hoping. To get everything we needed, we was praying, wishing, and hoping. I ain't make this environment, it's painting the pictures. If you ain't spreading love, you paint with sickness. With stern face, learn grace, replace hate with indifference. I do all like a prophet, I make it with interest.
Ka, A Martyr's Reward is the album, PWH. I went and listened to the whole album, Greg.
Yeah.
But this track, I know why you chose this track. So, Sound Opinions listeners, you know, Greg never talks about it, but he is a keyboardist, right? and the organ happening there, you know, it's
well,
as
that's
if,
the churchy element, right?
Well, you know? But it's John Lord from Deep Purple playing the cathedral organ.
Yes, the psychedelic church organ. Yeah.
You know, I knew you would love that.
It's great stuff. The entire album is well worth checking out. Now we want to hear from our listeners. Do you have a buried treasure everyone should hear? Let us know in our Facebook group or in our Patreon community. Leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org, as well. Coming up, we share more buried treasures. Then we'll talk with Tamar Efek about one of our favorite albums of the year so far. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
Thank you.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island, so we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, Lemonade Shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we are back. We have a couple more buried treasures to share. And Greg, because we were so fascinated with our conversation with Tamar Afek, we're going to do some bonus buried treasures on the bonus podcast. But I got one more for this show. It is a song called Letter by a group, or really one extraordinary woman, who goes under the moniker Hot Kid. Run Together, Hot Kid. You know, it seems as if Shiloh Harrison from Canada is producer, songwriter, lead guitarist, auteur, running her own label into multimedia. Just a fireball, a one-woman explosion of talent and energy. But even someone as self-confident and ambitious and nonstop energetic as Shiloh has self-doubts. And what this song, Letter, is about is dealing with those self-doubts, questioning yourself, and almost writing like a letter to yourself to remind you that you can do it. I know I can't take it because I've tried, she sings in the chorus. And yet, moving again from these dreamy kind of vocals into this big alt indie sound, you know, she made it. She makes it, right? Mm-hmm. We're all going to make it if only we have the rock. I still believe. Here it is, Hot Kid, Letter. Letter by Hot Kid. Great stuff, huh?
Actually, when you mentioned that you were going to play this as part of your buried treasures, I said, where have I? Hot Kid, okay. And then I went back and I realized in 2017 she put out an album that I really liked.
Mm.
And it's sort of in that similar vein to what Letter's about. It's sort of that there's a dreamy pop element going through there,
yeah.
in a rock band context, which I really love. Speaking of that dreamy vibe, my next selection is in that vein as well by a group called The Armed. They have been around since 2009, kind of the backstory here. It's a band out of Detroit. They have taken great pains to make their identities somewhat obscure. They're not big on, posting the names of the band members on their individual recordings. They have been famously obscure in interviews about who's in and who's out of the band. The best we can say, it's a collective. You don't quite know who's going to be in on it all the time. And in the same way, it's really hard to put your finger on what the band is sounding like.
Yeah.
Because they're ostensibly associated with the hardcore punk scene. And I get that to an extent, but hardcore, man, when you put this record on and you're expecting
you
a hardcore shot in the face, you're not going to get that all the way. There's elements of that in here, but there's everything else as well. I think one of the interesting aspects of this band is that they have collaborated for a number of years with Kurt Ballou, who is a legend in the hardcore community with his Massachusetts band Converge. Been one of my favorite bands for decades. So Ballou has a, I'm not quite sure what role he plays, which is the way they play everything. You're not quite sure what's going on in the relationship.
I was
going
to say, you know, as I looked into them too, it's like that Pink Floyd thing.
Yeah.
The enigmatic cover, and we're going to leave you to fill in all the blanks,
right,
and only give you the music to go by.
Exactly. And the music doesn't give you any real hints about who they are, because they seem to have this incredibly eclectic taste in what they're doing.
I had to take a phone call when I started listening to the album, right? And I heard the song you wanted to highlight, and then I came back and I said, oh man, Spotify once again slipped to another like algorithm that I don't care about,
right,
but this sounds okay. And then I was like, wait, we're still on the same band.
Yeah, exactly. So you're running the gamut from metal to electronic, from shoegaze to hardcore. I mean, it's all over the map. You know, I personally like that sort of thing. I heard the first track on this record, and I was going, wait a minute, have I got the right band? I'm thinking The Armed. I'd heard some of their stuff before, and I just love this track. It's the title track from an album called Ultra Pop. It's their fourth studio album since 2009, and I love it. But if you think everything else on the record is going to sound like this, you got another thing coming.
Yeah, yeah.
It's The Armed with Ultra Pop on Sound Opinions.
Armed, Ultra Pop, good one, Greg Cott. I think I like all the treasures this week. But do you have a buried treasure we need to hear? Leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org, or tell your fellow listeners about it in our Facebook group.
Talk to me, don't blow my cover, let it all out. You're not my lover, you know you wanna cry, never said never. Do you wanna see me die? It's just bad weather.
That is a little bit of the song Show Me Your Pretty Side by our guest this week, Israeli singer, songwriter, and guitarist Tamar Hayfek. I first raved about Tamar back in early January, episode 788, and chose the song you just heard a moment ago as a buried treasure. Later that month, her album, All Bets Are Off, came out, and I think the two of us have been loving it ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this is a great record. It is one of those keepers from this year that I think is going to end up on some top 10 lists, including the two people involved.
Don't want to tip off anybody, but...
She's got a heavy classical and jazz music background, but she knew that her only path for her was to be a rock and roll singer.
Yeah, it was just
a songwriter
there,
and a guitarist. She's also a technician and a music history devotee, as you'll hear in our interview. We began our conversation with Tamar by asking about how she fell in love with underground rock, and specifically with bands like Fugazi and Shellac.
I think I was drawn to what I called the underground rock. I was drawn to it because of the aspect of the sound. I felt like I discovered the world of sound. It began with a guitar. You know, there are so many kinds of distortion, right? Like the distortion of Pantera isn't like the distortion of the Stooges and isn't like the distortion of Led Zeppelin. And I was very excited by the diversity in the guitar sound.
Mm-hmm.
And at a later point, I began being fascinated with the whole recording process of all the instruments, especially the drums, which is part of what led me to record the album in Deptone Records. We can talk a little bit later why I chose to record it there.
Yeah.
But coming from the classical world, where sound wasn't really a topic, I mean, the sound was clean, you know, either whether it was playing on the piano or singing in a choir with different orchestras. No one ever talked about the sound besides the sound that you produce yourself, right, as a singer, or dynamics in instruments if you play the cello. But we've never been talked to about the recording process. And I think that's one of the main things that got me fascinated with the world of the underground rock.
So, yes, you mentioned Daptone Records. You know, and Daptone, of course, is a center for these wonderful old-school, soulful R&B sounds. What made you want to record there?
I remember when I was searching for places to record that I read an interview with the technician and co-founder of the label, Gabriel Roth, I think.
Yeah.
He recorded the Black to Black sessions, and he talked about how he prefers taking 2 weeks to find the right place to put a microphone on the drums, as opposed to putting 2 dozen microphones on the drums and making it sound like one thing, right? Because like one of the main things you confront with while mixing is that you try to glue all the microphones on the drums together to sound like one unit.
Right.
And I loved that. I loved the fact that he took that's what he said. And I felt like, in the philosophical way, I felt it connected to me in the sense that I preferred touring with my band for 2 months. We toured Europe for 1 month and then the States for 1 month. And I preferred touring for 2 months to find our sweet spot as a band and record one take rather than a dozen of takes. So yeah. I really loved that and connected with that. And that was one of the main reasons I chose it. It's a studio that is more familiar with soul and funk music, which I also like the idea of recording more rock. But the way they record is more old-fashioned, and the analog equipment always has this sense of realism that glues the performance together.
Yeah, a certain warmth. And of course, that's how the orchestra is recorded. Everybody's playing at once. There's one take. And you better know how to mic that orchestra.
Exactly. So maybe singing with a choir and an orchestra did influence me.
Yeah, exactly.
Unconsciously.
Do you still feel like you bring some of your classical training into what you're doing now? Or do you see it as a completely different world? When you know, because you're talking about the way sound changed for you when you heard a distorted guitar. But are you bringing any of those classical training lessons into your songwriting and your playing currently?
That's a good question. You know, many times when people talk about genres, they talk about sound. But I believe that a genre also has an approach, an attitude. And sometimes there are a lot of similarities between genres. For example, you know, when people heard jazz band and they wanted to give it a compliment, it says it has the jazz, right? And when you see a rock and roll show, you say, yeah, this is rock and roll. And there is a certain attitude that that connects between all these genres. And one of the attitudes in the classical music is there is a lot of discipline. When you learn a part, you repeat it again and again, and there are different kinds of techniques to do that. So I feel I bring with me the discipline of the classical music training I got into my rehearsals with my band. But also I feel like if you take a song like Russian Winter, for example, and you hear the bass line, you hear a distorted bass line, and someone that isn't used to hearing this kind of music and comes from the classical world will might hear it and say, "Ah, this is I don't like this. This is like too noisy, or this has a lot of distortion." But if I have a cello play that part, it will sound very classical. I mean, I still believe my arrangements are still pretty classically influenced. And also during the COVID-19 pandemic, I found myself starting doing these acoustic versions for our songs from the album in the form of chamber music. I did it with an oboe player and a cello player. And we did a session for NPR, and I did some sessions for different magazines in Europe. And it's also something that I'm very excited about, and it's fun to do.
That's cool. Well, you mentioned Russian Winter. That song is very ambitious. I think the mix of sounds and genres, it really isn't a genre. It's multiple genres in that song. So when you're writing, you're obviously not thinking about, hey, is this a rock song? Is this going to be more classically influenced? It's all kind of in a big blender, it sounds like.
Yes. I mean, I started when I got into the rock and roll world, I started as what interested me the most was the guitar. I was all about being a guitar hero and dealing.
After playing a piano when you were a youth.
Yes.
The first instrument, yes. So guitar you discover at 18, you're going to be a guitar hero.
Yes. And, I mean, explore the concept of the guitar hero. And, you know, my teachers were, you know, mostly John Frusciante, Kurt Cobain. Later I got into Wes Montgomery and B.B. King and all that. But at the beginning, it was like more about what the hell was Jimi Hendrix doing? Yeah. I was like, really? I was like, I spent a good time just like, I can't, like, no way. I have nothing to do with this. I can see it, but it won't help. And then I got my first JMP Super Bass Marshall. Now, you don't live in Israel.
Yeah.
But getting a Super Amp Marshall from the 70s in Israel, you know, it's declaring war. And it took me a lot of time to get it, but then I got it. And once I got my wah-wah pedal, I started getting a grasp of what Jimi Hendrix was doing. It's funny because Jimi Hendrix is, you know, we still didn't talk about it, but, you know, it was important for me to improvise on this album because I felt like improvisation was something that was missing a little bit from the rock albums that I listened to at the time I made the album. And I was reading a lot about how jazz records were made, and I was trying to, you know, get some techniques for improvisation. And then I remember I saw there's a show online on YouTube, the Jimi Hendrix Experience in Sweden, live in Sweden in 69. And he starts the show by saying,
"We're going to play nothing but oldies but baddies tonight, because we haven't played together in about 6 weeks. So we're just going to jam and see what happens tonight. Hope you don't mind. You know, we're just going to mess around this jam, see what happens."
And then they play, and it just sounds amazing. And it was like, I came back to Jimi Hendrix, I think, as a producer rather than a guitar player that tried to understand what he was doing. I was starting also to appreciate him as a producer in the sense that, you know, they basically improvised a lot of the show. And it also gave me this big drive of daring to improvise rock and roll on stage.
When we come back, we will hear more about Tamar's songwriting process and what the rock scene is like in Israel. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we're back. This week, we're talking with the multi-talented artist Tamar Afek about her album All Bets Are Off. I wanted to know if her intricate genre-blending instrumentals were part of the song construction from the start, or if she adds them later.
At the beginning, when I was exploring the Guitar Hero, so I was just about, you know, playing the guitar parts I have and build a song around it, you know, who cares, as long as I play guitar really loud and good. But then I started changing my approach completely and looking at it from a producer point of view. And in that process, I decided I'm writing all the songs on an acoustic guitar, and the arrangements and the production will come later. And basically, the way I worked on this album was, you know, I used to tell this when I talk about my production technique. You know, many times, you know, musicians have this thing, which is not bad, but it's like, it's all about don't ruin the song. You know, like the song is so important, and you don't have to, you can't ruin the song. And I can't, you know, I came from Israel. I wanted to tour the States. I wanted to tour Europe for a girl from Israel. You know, who cares about the songs? Who cares about anything? I just want to tour. You know, the songs are an excuse for touring. So in the same way, I felt like the songs are an excuse to make music. I want to make music. I want to have like this really interesting bass line going in the background. And I wrote one, an interesting drum part in the background. And I want, and that's the most important thing. So the thing I would tell my musicians is, imagine the song is like a car, and now let's crash this car into a tree, and there's an accident.
yeah.
And, well, you know, I still want people to recognize that this was a car, you know, maybe I want them to think this was a Maserati, right? But I still want them to crash the car into a tree. And this process involves different things. It brings special things from out of the musicians. I encourage them to do things that normally other people wouldn't encourage them to do. But there are also, you know, some guidelines. I think Russian Winter and Crossbow, the basic idea was that I felt that I wanted to have this raw kind of sound and feeling. Many times I feel when I hear new music, it's like I feel I'm getting this unconscious message of like, hear me, this is very good, this is very well produced, this is shiny kind of message. And I wanted to give a different message. You know how when you're really hungry for a very, very long time, you haven't eaten anything and you don't have any food, and then suddenly you have a tomato, and there's no oil, there's no lemon, there's no salt, there's no pepper, but you're really, really hungry. So you're eating the tomato and it's like the most amazing thing you ever tasted, because suddenly you can appreciate like the raw tomato without anything. And this is the message I wanted to give. I wanted to give the message, I know how hungry you are. Here are the bass, and here is the bass, and here are the drums. I know you haven't heard them like this naked for a while, you know. Here, you can meet them again, you know. I know it's been a while. Felt like, you know, I want to hear drums for like 1 minute, 2 minutes, just drums. I mean, if I would go to a show, I would just want to hear drums for a little bit, you know. I don't need everyone together all the time. Something in the raw feeling, you know, today, especially in the DAW generation, I feel it. That's the thing that excited me the most, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want you to think, Tamar, that we are obsessed with Russian Winter, because I love every track on the album. The first one I played was Show Me Your Pretty Side. But Russian Winter, right? You're talking so much about sound and musicianship and arrangements. I'm struck also by the lyrics, and I haven't seen many reviews giving you your credit there, using, General Winter, as they call in Russia, right? You know, it wasn't the Russian army that defeated Hitler or Napoleon. It was the minus 30 degree temperatures in the winter.
Someone asks me, someone hits the point, yeah.
Yeah, well, you sing in that song, I'll fight the Russian winter straight into your heart. You say you can't see blood, but I plan to miss that part.
I'll fight the Russian winter straight into your heart. You say you can see blood, but I plan to miss that part.
And I was wondering, you know, how that came to you. I love that.
Yeah, it came to me while I was reading about this book about... about the World War, the book is called, I'm not sure how you say it in English. It talks about like the crucial mistakes that have been done in different wars in history.
Mm.
And the turning point, like if Hitler wouldn't have went to Russia, what would have happened, you know?
Yeah.
And he explores it, but in different situations in Japan and all over the world. And yeah, during history, there were a compendium of high seas military disasters, which were a result of, you know, insufficient planning and miscalculation and meaningless ideologies. So I use this phrase more like as a metaphor for wrong decisions and choices one makes in life. And I think the way to avoid these mistakes is by each side deciding about his or her red lines in every relationship on every level, whether it's social or political or personal.
Yeah, yeah, the red lines. Well, you know, that leads into a question we have to ask you as a smart, passionate artist in Tel Aviv talking to us. It's been a hell of a couple of months and violence on every side. How do you create art in the midst of that, bombs raining down?
Yes, it's not easy. It's definitely been some challenging months. But I mean, that's, you know, I chose to be a musician, and when I do music, you know, the world outside doesn't exist. I'm just, you know, in my space. And of course, songs like Russian Winter and Crossbow, you know, these are songs that are associated with destructive behavior. And I do feel like my songs, you know, the target is to put an end to all tragic statistics of violence between human beings. So I feel like it definitely influences my songs and my music, but on a day-to-day basis, I'm just me at my studio, you know, doing my thing.
Beautiful confusion, delicate plans. Beautiful solution, nothing to add.
When Israel is functioning, and open, and there is not violence. Do you see both your fellow Israelis and people of Arab descent coming to shows? Is the underground segregated in any way, or do people come together through music?
Not enough. There are some events. You know, personally, I live in Jaffa, which is a place where Arabs and Israelis live together. In coexistence, you know, when the bombs were happening, I was, we go to the staircase. I sat with my Arab neighbors, and we both together talked about, you know, how unfortunate the situation is because of the extremists of both sides. Yeah. And yes, definitely, there's it's not integrated enough. There are parties and events that try to, you know, that focus on the integration, but it's difficult. It's hard.
I'm, you know, curious because you, you know, you come from a country that isn't necessarily widely known for producing great rock bands, although I will have to say that I was a huge fan of Monotonix. That I don't know if they were, you happened to see them at all, but the one thing that struck me about Monotonix.
I just saw the singer yesterday. He's my neighbor here in Japan.
Is that right? That's great.
My
And the thing I remember about them, Tamar, was that they were so, they set up right in the middle of the audience. It's like we're all in this together. We're not separating ourselves from the audience in any way. We're one of you. We're making a big noise here in the middle of this. And everybody was celebrating. I mean, here it is, the most jaded music conference in the world, right? All these people who had seen everything. And they're jumping up and down for Monotonix because they were so amazing at the South by Southwest Music Festival in Austin, you know, more than a decade. I think the band broke up like 10 years ago, right? Or something like that. But they were amazing. And I wonder, you know, are there more shows, more bands like that in Israel? I mean, is that kind of the vibe when you go to a show? Or how are people responding to the music in a live setting there? You know, is it like that all the time?
Well, Monotonix is definitely a special band.
yeah.
And they definitely, it's a band that also influenced me. Their guitar player, Jonathan Gatt, has a solo project now. I also have an EP that he produced, so we are good friends. Monotonix was definitely one of a kind. I would say there are a couple of Israeli bands that have the same vibe, but it's still not exactly the same. But I do feel that Monotonix brought something very Israeli. I mean, you know, on one hand, we in Israel, you know, we didn't get a chance to experience a lot of great live bands. You know, we mostly saw it on YouTube, or, you know, someone went to the States and came back with stories. We didn't experience the way people in the States experience it. And I think Monotonix brought something. On one hand, they were very influenced by a lot of American bands. I remember, do you know Federation X? X were in Israel. I remember they like, we were all influenced by Federation X. You know, they were so loud and heavy, and Monotonix were also, saw them and were really influenced by them. And of course, you know, there are obviously, we were listening at the time of Monotonix, you know, we were really into all these bands like Polvo and Jesus Lizard and Chillak and obviously, you know, Iggy Pop influenced Monotonix, and there are many Americans that you could sense the influence, but they still brought something very Israeli. You know, in Hebrew we say chutzpah, you know, this they brought this chutzpah like to the rock and roll, and I think that's part of what people enjoyed.
That's an interesting perspective, Greg, right? Because what I've always said about Jesus Lizard, who you just name-dropped, Tamar, is to only know the records or even the YouTube videos, you're getting about 10% of what the Jesus Lizard was, because you ain't sort of lived, especially not lived the Jesus Lizard until, you know, David Yao has been body surfing over your head, spitting and sweating on you, you know.
All I know is that life is good. My heart.
what are you going to be able to do? Are you going to be able to tour All Bets Are Off in Europe and the States again? Are you? What are you hoping to do now that the world is slowly opening up?
Yes, I already have a European tour planned. We're working on planning our U.S. tour. So that's definitely something that I look forward to. Yeah, and I hope to next time I tour the States, I hope to already record the next album.
Are you going to go back to Daptone?
It's a good question. It's a good question.
You know, guy Albini has a little studio here in Chicago where he talks about the joys of miking a drum set with one mic.
And, it would be a dream to record with Albini, actually. It would be a dream come true.
Oh, you know, he's got this attitude of, I'm a plumber. If your pipe is broken, I'll come over and fix your... You know, I mean, he'll work with anybody if you pay him.
Yeah, I see Albini, you know.
He should do you for free, though.
I saw a lot of interviews with Albini. So yeah, I mean, I know I have
it's a mixed bag. He hasn't talked.
I have a feeling that, you know, if it's like, yes sir, you know, I mean, yeah. I don't see a no sir there.
Well, you know, I'm a fan. You working with him like PJ Harvey. You know, I'm sure Polly Jean didn't take any crap from that guy, and I'm sure you'd put him in its place and get
I'm a fan. You know, I will be starstruck. You know.
Yeah.
All Bets Are Off. And I understand you came up with that title before the pandemic, but it seemed like it'd have extra special meaning now that we've been through this. Prophetic in a sense of the way you're approaching life now, too. I don't know. You tell me.
Good question. Yes, All Bets Are Off. I named the album before the pandemic. It was meant to symbolize uncertainties in life, in a way that, you know, deepens the cognitive dissonance one has. You know, for example, when you buy a washing machine and you're not sure you bought the best washing machine and you want to convince yourself that the washing machine is good. So you start seeing this washing machine everywhere. Like, you start seeing everyone buying this washing machine and it makes you feel like you did the right choice. And, I mean, the name meant to represent the situation where you don't know exactly what's going to happen. And it was very relevant during the pandemic when you have a small factor like a virus canceling all the former assumptions and changing reality. But on the same time, it also has an optimistic meaning because it means everything is open, right? It's like the name has the word off in it, but actually you guys use it when you want to say that everything can happen. So you can't avoid drastic situations and changes in life. Life is about drastic changes and life is about having unpredictable things happen to you. And once you realize that life is not something that stays stable the whole time, I think it's easier to deal with it and cope with it.
Yeah, learning to accept the unexpected.
Yes, exactly.
You must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
We have been talking to Tamar Afek, All Bets Are Off, fantastic album. Thank you so much, Tamar.
Thank you so much for having me.
That wraps up our conversation with Tamar Afek, although I think we could have gone on forever, Greg. Now we want to hear from you. Do you have any thoughts about this incredible Israeli artist? Leave a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. Mr. Kot, what do we have on the show next week?
Jim, next week we're going to tackle some of the biggest album releases of recent week, and we're also going to have some of our guest artists give us their Desert Island Jukebox picks. And this week on our bonus podcast, we've got an interview with Leon Bridges about his latest album, Gold Digger Sound.
Sounds great. For more Sound Opinions, listen to our podcast wherever you find such things. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors.
And speaking of sponsors, every week our show reaches hundreds of thousands of curious listeners from around the globe via podcast and on 150 public radio stations nationwide. If you'd like to learn more on how your business or organization can also reach this engaged and educated audience, you can email sponsor@soundopinions.org. That's sponsor@soundopinions.org.
Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo, and our social media consultant is Katie Cott.
When you lied, said you didn't want me, tell me what was I supposed to do?